really a lot of paperwork involved, but the principal was so angry he did it on the spot. I picked up the soap. Why didn't you tell me you were going to do any of this? We had to make your part look real, too. You mean you didn't trust me any more than the principal? Erica paused a moment before answering. To be honest, we weren't sure how well you'd perform if you knew. I thought you'd be fine, but Granddad doesn't really know you, and my father backed him. I squeezed the soap so hard it fired out of my hands, caroming off the wall. Alexander's in on this? We needed a third person. Granddad and I can't do surveillance 24 hours a day by ourselves. Besides, I had to go back to your middle school and mop up the mess you left back there. Your cover story was blown. I groaned. That wasn't my fault. First, Mike was goofing around, and then Joshua showed up and things got out of hand. I'm well aware of what transpired. So how'd you fix it? I had to run a disinformation campaign. I showed up at the school, pretended to be your ex-girlfriend looking to make up, and I spread the word that you were the physics king of St. Smithens, not some undercover junior agent. It took a while to convince some of those airhead girls, but lucky for you, I can be very persuasive. You knew that I'd told Mike you were my girlfriend? Only for the last 6 months. I'm a spy, Ben. It's my job to know things. I quickly changed the subject. I thought you felt Alexander was a terrible spy. He's gotten better lately. He's really trying to prove himself to Granddad, although we still won't let him have a gun unless it's an emergency. I can't believe you had more faith in your father than you did in me. If I didn't have faith in you, do you think you'd even be doing this? I considered that while picking up the soap again. I guess not. Exactly. Speaking of which, I need your intel. If you stay in that shower too long, they're going to get suspicious. I knew Erica was right, but I wasn't ready to move on quite yet. How long are you expecting me to stay here? As long as it takes you to figure out what Spider's plotting. What if that takes a year? I'll be stuck here that whole time. You're not the only one making sacrifices here. I'm AWOL from school, and while you've got a bed, a rec center, and fresh groceries every day, I'm crammed in a surveillance vehicle with my father and grandfather, living on fast food and sleeping on the passenger seat. At least it was your decision to do this, I said bitterly. Listen, Erica told me. We knew Spider was plotting something big. We knew something had to be done about it, and we couldn't trust the CIA to handle it without tipping off the enemy. Like it or not, you're the best option we had. Now, if you succeed, Granddad will be able to go to the agency, tell them what we've done, get both of us reinstated at the academy, and probably even swing us some distinguished service medals to boot. You'll make a bigger impression on the top brass at Central Intelligence with this one mission than most students will make in 6 whole years of spy school. So drop the sad sack act and let me know what you've learned. I sighed. All right. I guess you've realized that Spider controls this whole community. Yes, we've scoped it out thoroughly. Did you know Joshua Halal was still alive? Not until he showed up at your middle school. He doesn't look so good. I was surprised by Erica's lack of emotion here. Even though Erica had raised lack of emotion to an art form, I was relatively sure that, back before Joshua Halal had left spy school, Erica had had a crush on him, if not even stronger feelings. And yet her reaction had betrayed none of this. I might as well have told her that I'd seen a squirrel, as opposed to a crush-turned-enemy risen from the dead. I decided not to dwell on it. There was too much else to discuss, and my skin was starting to pucker. Are you aware Spider has a whole underground complex here? Erica didn't answer right away, which was close as she ever came to admitting I knew something that she didn't. Where? Under the rec center. There's a secret entrance in the rock wall. What do they have down there? There's a conference room and a kitchenette with a Sunday bar. Really? Yeah, with toppings and everything. And then there's some sort of control center. Joshua ran Murray's extraction from there the other night, but I'm sure it must be for more than that. I saw him programming something in Russian. What was it? I don't know. I can't read Russian. Since when? Since always. That's inconvenient, Erica said in a tone that left no doubt in my mind that she could speak Russian, and had probably been doing it since she was 3. Did you see anything you could read? Couple numbers, although I don't know what they could mean. What were the numbers? Erica didn't even ask if I remembered them. She knew I had. I repeated them from memory. She wrote them down, then asked, "What did he do then?" He downloaded everything to a flash drive and stuck it in a safe. What kind of lock did the safe have? A 15-digit electric combination lock. Did you see him enter the combination? No, his body was blocking my line of sight. Do you have any idea what Spider's plans are? No. None whatsoever? I could actually hear Erica frowning. "Everyone's being very secretive around me," I explained. "I did hear one thing, though. Joshua wanted Murray to check out something they called 56 today." "And what is that?"
I was hoping you would know."
Erica sighed. "I'll run it past Granddad. He's pretty sharp when it comes to this stuff. Whatever it is, I think it's down at Sandy Hook. Murray was taking pictures like crazy down there."
"No kidding. He snapped a couple hundred of my bottom, the scumbag."
"I think maybe he was only pretending to look like a scumbag to take pictures of what was really important. We both know Murray. When it comes to being a scumbag, he's the real deal."
"Still," I said, "there were some buildings behind a hill near the beach, but I never got a chance to see what they were. Murray took some pictures of them, too."
"He did," Erica admitted. "I saw that. We'll look into it. Now, even though you don't know what the plot is, do you know who's in on it?"
"Joshua and Murray are, but I doubt they're really in charge."
"No, the real puppet masters are keeping to the shadows. How about your fellow students?"
"I don't think either of them knows what the plan is."
"Either?"
Erica sounded surprised, which was a rare occasion. "You mean there's only two?"
"Yes, they were both at the beach with us today."
"That's the entire school?
You didn't know?
I thought you were keeping a close eye on us."
"We're doing our best. It's not easy with only the three of us, and a wall surrounding the whole community. We figured we'd missed a few students."
"Well, you didn't."
"Who is the pasty one in the body stocking?"
"Nefarious Jones."
"Cute code name."
"No, that's real."
"You're kidding."
"No, he says it's why he turned to crime. Though I think there might be other reasons. I'm guessing he got picked on a lot back home before he came to Spider."
"Makes sense. Social pariahs are good targets for an organization like Spider. Kids who grow up thinking the whole world is their enemy and wanting revenge. What's his specialty?"
"I don't know," I admitted. "He spends most of his time playing video games. Although he indicated today that there might be a reason for it all."
"I suppose there could be.
And the other student, the munchkin who kept dunking you? That was Ashley Sparks, the gymnast, right?"
"You recognized her? Are you asking if I'm a fan of competitive gymnastics?"
"No, but Granddad took some photos and we ran an internet search. Let me guess, she got disgruntled after not making the cut for the Olympics and turned to crime."
"Yeah, kind of crazy, huh?"
"Frankly, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. Having high expectations placed on you at a young age can create a lot of emotional strain."
There was something in Erica's voice that made me think this statement was based on experience rather than guesswork.
"Let me guess, they've got her doing martial arts?"
"Exactly. Spider's developed this gymnastics-based kung fu kind of thing for her. I saw her use it when she and Nefarious sprang Murray. It's really amazing."
"Amazing?" Erica repeated. "Do you have a crush on this girl?"
"Of course not."
"Sounds like you do. And frankly, it kind of looked like it today, the way you two were frolicking in the surf together."
"I thought I was supposed to be getting close to the enemy."
"You're supposed to be finding out what they're up to, not falling in love with them."
"I'm not in love," I snapped, a little too quickly.
"Well, keep it that way. Just remember, Ashley Sparks might seem nice and friendly, but she willingly chose to go work for Spider. Under that cute, sparkly exterior, she's evil.
At least she didn't get me expelled from school and force me to go undercover for the enemy without even caring to ask if I wanted to."
My own words surprised me. It wasn't until I said them that I realized how angry I was at Erica. She had made decisions that put me in danger before, but that had generally been to protect me from even greater danger. This time she'd gone much further, manipulating me and my future for her own agenda, or her grandfather's agenda at least, and she didn't even seem to care.
Erica let the words hang there for a while, then decided to pretend as though they'd never been said.
"We should wrap this up. You've been in the shower too long as it is."
I looked at my hands. My fingertips were so pruned they looked like tiny versions of the Himalayas.
"Are you going to stay in contact with me, or am I going to be left on my own again?"
"I'll be in contact, but we have to be careful. Can you check in at 0200 hours tomorrow night?"
"I think so."
"Good. In the meantime, I'll see what I can do about getting you a break and enter kit."
"Why?"
"Because I need you to break into the underground lair and enter it, and then find out what's in that safe."
I gulped.
"That's going to be dangerous."
"Well, you need to do it, unless you'd prefer that Operation Bedbug run for another few months."
"I'd prefer that Operation Bedbug had never run at all," I said, then thought to ask, "Why is it called Operation Bedbug?"
"Think about it."
I did, then understood.
"Because I'm undercover."
"Bingo," Erica said.
"Talk to you tomorrow."
And then she was gone. I turned off the shower towelled myself dry, and took the radio out of my ear. Then I cased the bathroom for a good place to hide it, spotting the bar of soap on the shower floor. It had been sitting in the water so long it had turned mushy. I gouged out a divot in the bottom with my thumb, dropped the radio inside, then took the soap I'd removed and spackled the hole back up. After a minute rolling it around in my hands, the soap looked good as new. No one would ever guess the radio was hidden inside. Pleased with my own cleverness, I slipped into my spider bathrobe, entered my room, and found Ashley sitting on my bed.
"Who are you just talking to?" she demanded.
Suddenly I didn't feel quite so clever anymore.
Chapter 12. Obfuscation. Spider Agent Training Facility, Student Housing, September 15, 21:45 hours.
"Who was I talking to?" I repeated, doing my best to appear sarcastic rather than terrified. "I was in the shower. How could I have been talking to anyone?"
"You tell me." Ashley narrowed her eyes suspiciously. She was surprisingly intimidating, even though she was dressed in a pink nightgown with unicorns on it. "Because it sure sounded like you were talking to someone." I pretended to have a sudden flash of understanding. "Oh, I know what you heard. I was talking, but only to myself. Sometimes I practice math when I'm in the shower. Multiplication tables, long division, that sort of thing."
Ashley's hard stare softened.
"You practice that stuff? Your file said you were naturally gifted at it."
"I'm naturally gifted because I practice. A lot." This was a massive lie. I'd never had to practice math in my life.
Ashley bought it, her cheeks flushed as pink as her nightgown.
"Oh, sorry for being so distrustful. It's just that I can hear your shower going from my room, and you were in there forever."
"I had sand everywhere," I explained. "Thanks to you. Every time you sneak attacked me, I got a pound of it up my ears."
"Oh," Ashley turned even pinker. "I wasn't really trying to spy on you. Your shower was running so long, I thought maybe something was wrong, like you'd passed out in there. So I came in here, and then I heard you talking, and..."
She trailed off, then frowned.
"This place gets to you sometimes. Joshua always says we're not supposed to trust anybody."
"Even our fellow students?"
"Well, you're new, and you did work for the enemy."
"And look how they treated me. They kicked me out." It wasn't hard to fake the bitterness in my voice. "After all I did for them. At least this school gives us some respect.
And they're not keeping us prisoner here."
The moment the words were out of her mouth, Ashley seemed to regret them.
"Not that I don't like it here," she said quickly. "I do."
"So do I," I said. Ashley glanced toward the door furtively, then lowered her voice.
"It's just that it's not quite what I expected. When I heard Spider had a secret headquarters, I kind of figured it'd be on some remote tropical island somewhere. Not New Jersey."
"Yeah, I was pretty surprised by that too," I said. "I was really hoping for the tropics myself, but at least they'd take good care of us here. My room at spy school wasn't nearly as nice as my room is here, and the food was terrible, and our rec center wasn't anywhere as amazing as this one."
Ashley nodded agreement. Her suspicions appeared to be gone.
"You're right. They gave me that whole gymnastics setup, for free. When I was training for the Olympics, my parents had to pay for all my equipment themselves. And when I got sixth place, the U.S. Olympic team didn't give me so much as a certificate."
Ashley's gaze hardened again. She unwittingly clenched my bedsheets in her fists, knuckles turning white with anger.
"Even though I was robbed, that judge was blind. I stuck that landing."
"I'm sure you did," I said. Ashley snapped back to reality and looked embarrassed again.
"Oh, boy," she said. "I went crico there for a moment, didn't I?"
"Crazy plus psycho?"
"Yes."
"Maybe a little," I teased.
"Well, that's the last time. I promise."
Ashley took a deep breath and then smiled.
"Who needs some stupid gold medal, right? Spider's gonna make us all so stinking rich, we'll be able to buy our own tropical islands."
I sat on the bed next to Ashley, intrigued.
"Who told you that?
Joshua?"
"Yeah, when he recruited me. He didn't promise to make you rich?"
"He only said I'd make a lot more than I would in the CIA. I didn't think to ask how much. I was really more interested in revenge."
Ashley laughed. "You're gonna make more than the CIA would pay you, all right. Joshua told me that Spider's newest scheme is gonna make billions."
This struck me as important. As far as I knew, Spider was an evil organization that caused chaos and mayhem for a price. And while that price was often very good, it was only in the millions, if that, not billions. Who had billions to spend on causing chaos?
"Do you have any idea what this new scheme is?" I asked, as innocently as I could manage.
Ashley shook her head.
"No, Nefarious said it might have something to do with mineral rights in Indonesia, but I have no idea where he even got that from.
Think they're going to tell us soon?
Oh, sure. They have to. We're going to do whatever it is in the next few days.
I almost tumbled off the bed in surprise.
The next few days?
Ashley signaled me to keep my voice down.
Yes. When? This weekend? Next week?
I don't know. Why are you so freaked out?
Because this thing is happening a lot sooner than I thought it was.
I snapped my feet and started pacing.
I thought it was going to be months away, years maybe.
Why?
Because I just started here. I thought we'd need a long time to train, to do whatever it is that they need us to do.
Well, we don't. Or at least you don't, you lucky duck. Nefarious and I have been here more than a year, working our bottoms off. You get to come in at the tail end, study for only a few weeks, and then hit the jackpot like the rest of us. You should be thrilled, not worried.
I stopped pacing, trying to pull myself together.
You're right. That is pretty cool. But I still don't have any idea what Spider even expects me to do in this scheme.
I'll bet it has something to do with that big old computer brain of yours, Ashley grinned.
Maybe I ought to start doing math problems in the shower. I'll need a mind like yours to count all my money.
I turned back to her. So once we've done this, what happens then? Do we stay here?
I doubt it. What's the point of going to school when you're crazy rich?
Well, where do we go then?
Anywhere we want.
I was thinking of Disney World. My family can never afford to go after shelling out for all my training. And now I'll be able to get the biggest suite they have.
You don't think we'll have to go into hiding?
Nope. Not if we do this right. Know what Joshua always says the perfect crime is?
One you get really rich from?
No. One that nobody knows you've committed. If no one knows we've pulled this crime off, then no one will be looking for us. We'll be able to keep up our lives just like usual. Only, we'll have a ton more money.
So, that'll be it for Evil Spy School. We'll never see each other again?
Not necessarily. You could come to Disney World with me.
Ashley blushed suddenly upon saying this, then turned away. Not like a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. I just had fun with you today, and Disney's probably not that great alone. Seeing as we've cut ties with all our friends, I figured, as long as we're lying low, we might as well do it together, right?
Nefarious, too?
Ashley made a face.
King of the Misfits?
Nefarious isn't exactly Mr. Fun. He'd spend all day playing video games if he didn't have to eat or poop.
Thank goodness you showed up. Nefarious would never have thought to talk Murray into springing us for a day.
I thought Nefarious said there was a reason for all his gaming.
Yeah, he's addicted to it.
I studied Ashley for a moment. Despite what Erica had said, she didn't seem to be the slightest bit evil. Bitter, yes, but not evil. If anything, she seemed to be a pawn in Joshua's plans, just like me.
So we just hop on a plane and go down there?
Yeah. For a couple of weeks. We could stay at the nicest resort, take all the VIP tours, maybe go on one of those cruises they have.
Sure, I said. I'd be happy to go with you.
Ashley gave a whoop and leapt off the bed.
Swassum! We're going to have so much fun.
She threw her arms around me and gave me a surprisingly strong hug. Her hair was still wet from the shower and smelled like strawberry shampoo. For a few moments, I found myself thinking that it wouldn't be so bad to score $1 billion and then go hide out at Disney World with her. Then I winced, realizing Erica had been right. I did have a crush on an enemy agent. Chapter 13. Aquatics. Spider Agent Training Facility. Recreation Center. September 16. 1000 hours. The next day, right after I woke up, I went looking for Murray.
It was well past breakfast time. I'd had trouble getting to sleep after my conversations with Erica and Ashley the night before. Too many thoughts had been rattling around in my brain.
What was Spider's plan? When were my fellow students and I going to be told about it? Or were we not going to be told at all? What role was I going to play in it? Could I do what Erica and her family expected of me? What was 56 and why was it so important?
When I came downstairs, Nefarious was in his usual spot on the couch, but both Ashley and Murray were gone.
Have you seen Murray this morning? I asked.
Nefarious pointed toward the recreation center and said, I grabbed a handful of Lucky Charms and set off.
Although the wreck was quite large, it didn't take me long to find Murray.
He was doing the only thing there that required no physical activity at all, soaking in the hot tub in the pool room. If that wasn't lazy enough, he also had a sandwich, 2 corn dogs, a Coke, and a bag of Nefarious's Cheetos within arm's reach. Ashley was in the pool room too, though she was actually exerting herself, doing flips off the high dive.
"Hey, sleepyhead," she yelled as I arrived. "Check this out."
Then she launched herself into a triple somersault with a pike. If I had tried something like that, I probably would have belly-flopped hard enough to snap my neck, but she sliced through the water's surface with barely even a splash. Murray applauded, then waved me over. The hot tub jets were on full force, churning the water so much he had to raise his voice to be heard over them. "Plenty of room in here. Want to join me?" I shook my head. "No thanks, I didn't bring my bathing suit."
"Neither did I."
I glanced warily into the hot tub. I couldn't see Murray's private parts through all the bubbles, but knowing he was naked in there made me even less inclined to join him. "Is whatever Spider's plotting happening soon?" Murray shot me a sideways glance. "Who told you that?" "I figured it out on my own."
"It was Princess Glitterpants, wasn't it?"
Murray looked across the room to where Ashley was climbing out of the pool.
"No."
"Yeah, it was. She likes you, you know."
I felt my ears turning red from embarrassment.
"She does not."
"If there's one thing I know, it's women," Murray proclaimed. "I was watching you two at the beach yesterday. Trust me, she's into you."
I watched Ashley scale the high dive ladder, feeling uneasy. She had been the other reason I couldn't sleep the night before. After she'd left, my whole room had smelled like her strawberry shampoo, reminding me of her. The crazy thing was, I felt guilty for having a crush on her. It wasn't because she was evil, it was because I felt like I was being unfaithful to Erica. Even though Erica and I weren't in a relationship at all, we were only friends. Or at least, I'd thought we were friends, up until Erica had sent me on Operation Bedbug and put my life at risk without even giving me so much as a warning.
"Watch this,"
Ashley called to us, then did a double backflip and zipped into the water with barely a ripple.
"You like her too, don't you?" Murray asked.
"No," I said, way too quickly. Murray laughed.
"Hey, it's cool if you do. There's no rule at Spider that says you can't date your fellow agents. And frankly, she'd be far better girlfriend material than the ice queen you've been carrying a torch for all this time."
I didn't want to admit it, but this had already occurred to me. In fact, I'd thought about it quite a lot while tossing and turning in bed the night before. Around 2 in the morning, I'd begun to wonder if I was growing interested in Ashley because I was upset at Erica. True, Ashley was a Spider agent, but she had never betrayed me. Plus, she was always warm and friendly, while Erica was cool and distant and often seemed as if she found the entire concept of friendship baffling, which made Ashley kind of the anti-Erica, although both of them could have mopped the floor with me in a fight. "You change the subject," I told Murray, changing the subject myself. "I want to know what Spider's plotting."
"Why?"
"Don't you think that if Spider wants me to be part of an operation, it makes sense for me to know what that operation is?"
"Not necessarily."
Murray took a bite of his sandwich. It was ostensibly bacon, lettuce, and tomato, but it was really more like bacon, lettuce, bacon, tomato, and more bacon. Murray had been consuming an absolutely astonishing amount of bacon since getting out of prison, as well as astonishing amounts of soda, ice cream, candy, cake, and sausage, too. Even though he'd been at Hidden Forest for only a few days, he seemed to have gained several pounds in that time. Across the room, Ashley hopped out of the pool and headed for the waterslide. "Why would Spider want to keep its agents in the dark?" I asked. Murray said,
"When the Allies were about to invade France on D-Day in World War II, do you think the generals told everyone what the plan was? No, because they knew that if they did, someone might blab it. Not on purpose, mind you, but it happens. People talk. One guy shoots his mouth off, and the next thing you know, the Allies show up on Normandy Beach to find the entire Nazi army waiting to massacre them."
Murray's comparing Spider to the Allied forces made me feel uneasy. After all, if Spider was anyone in a World War II scenario, it was the Nazis. "I get the need for secrecy, but at some point, before D-Day, the Allies told the soldiers what the plan was. They didn't just drop them off on the beach and say, 'Surprise, you're invading France today.'"
"And you will find out, when the time is right."
Murray took another bite of his sandwich. The single slice of tomato he'd put on it slipped out and plopped into the hot tub, where it quickly disappeared beneath the bubbles. Murray didn't seem to care. Ashley launched herself onto the waterslide and whooped with joy all the way down.
"When's the time going to be right?" I asked.
"Soon.
How soon?"
"I don't know. It's not my call."
Ashley barreled into the pool with a huge splash, then came up laughing.
"That was swawsome," she yelled. "Ben, don't just sit there watching me. Get your suit and come on in."
"Maybe in a bit," I called back.
"Notice how she didn't invite me to join her?" Murray pointed out.
"Only you?"
"Because she knows you're too lazy to actually climb the ladder to the slide."
"Because she likes you. You think Erica would ever invite you to go down a water slide with her? Or go down a water slide at all? Or do anything fun, ever?
Am I the only one who doesn't know the plan? I asked.
You keep changing the subject away from Ashley,
and you keep changing it to her. It sure seems like I'm the only one who doesn't know Spider's plan.
That's not true. Murray bit off a huge hunk of corn dog. Almost no one knows the plan. Not everyone here has the same access as I do. Your future girlfriend over there doesn't, Nefarious doesn't, even some of your instructors don't, and as for those guys...
Murray pointed out the large windows toward the construction zone, which was crawling with workmen.
They're completely clueless about what's really going on here.
That's another thing, I said. If secrecy is so darn important to Spider that they can't even tell their own agents what they're planning, why would they allow all these other people into the compound? Seems like a lot of loose ends.
Spider doesn't leave loose ends.
Murray crammed a handful of Cheetos into his mouth. Several fell into the water, creating a day-glow orange slick on the surface around Murray's chest.
Every guard, maid, landscaper, and pool boy here has never heard a single mention of Spider. They were all hired by a shell company designed to look like it works for the Hidden Forest Homeowners Association.
And the construction crews?
Employees of Lou Brothers Construction, which is not, as they believe, run by Rocky and Roman Lou, but is in fact secretly owned and operated by Spider.
Not one of those hammer jockeys has any idea they've worked on anything other than your standard everyday gated community. Anything we need built specially was taken care of by an outside contractor who, again, had no idea they were working for us.
I assume the secret lair, hidden 3 stories beneath us, fell into this category. Whoever had built it wouldn't have necessarily known it was going to be used for evil. There wasn't anything particularly insidious about a few underground rooms in a Sunday bar. Spider had probably lied and told the builders that it was some sort of high-tech security center. I couldn't ask about any of this, though, since I wasn't supposed to know that the secret lair existed. Instead, I asked, "So what happens to Hidden Forest after we pull off our scheme?"
"What do you mean?" Murray replied.
"Well, the word is that Spider's going to make a lot of money this time around. So much that no one here would ever have to work again."
"Did Ashley tell you that, too?"
I reflexively glanced across the room where Ashley was rocketing down the waterslide again.
"No, I figured it out myself. As you might recall, I was training to be a spy until recently."
Murray nodded.
"Yes, you were. And so you're wondering, why go through all the trouble to build this place if we're not going to need it anymore?"
"Exactly.
Because Hidden Forest isn't merely a top-secret base. It's also a lucrative real estate investment."
"You mean you're going to sell these homes?"
"For a ton of money," Murray grinned.
His teeth were full of bacon bits.
"You gotta hand it to the big boys at Spider. They're brilliant. They needed a headquarters, but they didn't want to do the whole standard spy movie bad guy thing and build an outpost on some remote island somewhere. After all, construction on remote islands is really expensive. You've got shipping, travel, labor issues, construction delays. The whole thing's a giant headache. I know of at least one secret evil organization that blew so much on their island headquarters that they went bankrupt. And even if you don't go bust, you're going to be stuck with the place. Giant complexes on remote islands are notoriously difficult to sell. But Hidden Forest is multi-purpose. We can plot and train for an evil scheme here, then turn it around and sell all the homes for quadruple the construction costs. We've already got Manhattan big shots lining up to buy them.
I had to admit, the whole thing was pretty clever.
Okay, so Spider has a plan for Hidden Forest. Do they have one for us?
Murray washed down the last of his sandwich with a swig of soda.
How so?
Ashley climbed out of the pool nearby, then scampered over to the jacuzzi and plunged inside before I could inform her that Murray didn't have any clothes on.
"Ah," she sighed, "this is swassome. Why aren't you in here, Ben?"
"Yeah, Ben," Murray echoed. "Why aren't you in here?"
"If we're going to suddenly be very rich in the next few days," I pressed on, "isn't that going to be suspicious? Does Spider have some sort of official story for us?"
Ashley turned to Murray.
"Hey, that's a good point. Do they?"
"Of course," Murray told us. "Given that we're kids, it makes the most sense to say that we inherited the money."
"From who?" Ashley asked.
"Our very eccentric, incredibly wealthy, long-lost great-uncles," Murray replied.
"And what happens," I said, "when someone decides to check into the story and finds out that I don't have a very eccentric, incredibly wealthy, long-lost great-uncle?"
"Leave that to Spider."
Murray upended the Cheetos bag and dumped the remains into his mouth. Half ended up in the hot tub.
"We have people working to create our long-lost uncles as we speak. It's really not that hard to fabricate a fictional human being, especially one who's dead. You only need some counterfeit documentation and a corpse to pass off as the body."
A corpse? Ashley repeated, flicking a rogue Cheeto away from her. Where do they get the corpse?
I don't know, Murray sighed, sounding exasperated. That's someone else's job. It can't be that hard, though. Thousands of people die every day. Cemeteries are chock full of them.
That's a lot of corpses to choose from.
You don't have to worry about any of this stuff. In fact, the less you know, the better. All you need to do is keep your trap shut as much as possible. If anyone says, how'd you get so rich, you say, my long-lost uncle left me the money. And if they ask more, just shrug and say, I didn't really know him at all. End of story.
How about our parents? I asked. That story won't fly with them. They know we don't have any eccentric, long-lost rich uncles.
Not necessarily, Murray countered. I mean, that's the whole point of being long-lost, isn't it? Lots of families have secrets. Why should ours be any different? And once Mom and Dad learn that dotty old uncle, whoever he was, left you a pile of dough, they'll probably be thrilled rather than suspicious.
No kidding, Ashley agreed, then muttered, it'll almost make up for me not making the Olympic team. I had to give the issue some thought. I guess my folks won't question it.
Of course they won't, Marie exclaimed. Not unless you give them reason to. After all, which story sounds more plausible? That you suddenly got a bunch of money from a long-lost uncle no one knew you had? Or you suddenly got a bunch of money by helping a top-secret evil organization pull off the crime of the century?
Good point, I admitted. But don't we have to worry about the CIA, too? Murray laughed.
They're not going to thwart us this time. You were their ace, and they cut you loose, the idiots.
They still know me, I pointed out. If a huge crime gets pulled off and I'm suddenly stinking rich, someone might start to ask questions, like Erica. Murray stopped laughing. This apparently had never occurred to him.
You won't have to worry about the CIA coming after you, said a voice behind me. All of us spun around to find Joshua Halal standing there. We hadn't heard him come in over the roar of the hot tub jets. He was finely dressed, as usual, in slacks, a button-down shirt, and a crisply knotted tie, which made him look extremely out of place in the pool room.
Why not? I asked. Joshua gave me a hard stare with his single eye.
What is the single best way to ensure that you get away with the crime?
Don't leave any evidence behind? Ashley suggested.
Joshua gave a disappointed sigh. Don't leave any evidence behind? That's child's play. Does this look like evil preschool to you?
No, sir.
Ashley cringed and shook her head, embarrassed. I suddenly understood what Joshua was getting at. You make sure all the evidence incriminates someone else.
The slightest hint of a smile creased Joshua's scarred face.
Exactly. We here at Spider have taken meticulous steps to ensure that, when the dust clears, others will take the fall for this crime.
The CIA will round them up to great fanfare. The case will be closed, and we will be free to go on with our lives. Our patsies will all claim they had nothing to do with the crime, of course. But then, all criminals make such claims, don't they?
I asked, so we're going to get rich while innocent people go to jail in our place?
Well, Joshua said, as you've pointed out before, we are evil. And besides, these Fall Guys won't be completely innocent. The evidence against them wouldn't be believable if they were. They are all miscreants, terrorists, mafiosi, and other assorted scum and villainy. The world will be much better off with them in jail, as will we. I forced a big smile onto my face, hoping it looked authentic.
That's brilliant.
Yes, Joshua agreed, it is. There will be no need for us to go into hiding or assume false identities. And even if your old friend Erica does have suspicions, no one at the CIA will want to hear them. After all, they'll think they've already caught the perpetrators. The last thing they'll want is for the public to find out they've been duped.
That doesn't mean Erica will back off, I pointed out.
Perhaps not, Joshua admitted. But if she, or anyone else, turns out to be a problem, we'll just take care of them. He said this calmly, without a hint of menace, the same way he might have said that we'd send them a nice note asking them to back off. But the intent of his words was unmistakable. Anyone who caused Spider trouble would die. It was getting harder and harder for me to fake pleasure at all this, but I did my best.
Now I'm really glad I switched sides.
So are we, Murray said, then turned to Joshua. Is there something else you wanted to tell us? I'm betting you didn't schlep all the way out here just to discuss logistics.
You're correct, Joshua told him. I've come to inform you that all systems are go for tomorrow. Phase 1 of our plan will initiate at 8 p.m.
Ashley broke into a huge smile.
That soon? Swassum, what are we doing?
For now, Joshua replied, you will continue your training as if it were any other day. Your assignments will be given to you tomorrow, shortly before initiation.
Ashley sprang out of the hot tub, so excited she was quivering. She didn't even notice Murray's escaped slice of tomato was clinging to her shoulder.
This is so exciting. I can't believe the big day is finally almost here.
She gave me a big wet hug that soaked through my t-shirt.
How about you, Ben? Aren't you thrillited?
Thrilled plus delighted? I asked.
You bet.
I told you guys we wouldn't have to wait much longer.
Murray pried himself out of the water and grabbed a towel. He'd been soaking for so long he was as red as a boiled lobster. Ashley's enthusiasm dampened when she realized Murray had been naked the whole time they'd been in the hot tub together, but only for a few moments. Then she returned to being exceptionally excited once again.
Can I go tell Nefarious?
Certainly, Joshua replied. Ashley cheered and raced out of the pool room, doing 2 cartwheels and a handspring en route. I struggled to fake excitement as well. I pasted on the happiest face I could muster, although inside my stomach was churning with anxiety. If I was going to stop Spider's evil plans, I couldn't wait until right before 0 hour to find out what they were. I was running out of time, which meant I was going to have to take some risks, which meant life was about to get a lot more dangerous.
Chapter 14. Retrieval. Spider Agent Training Facility, September 17, 0200 hours. I set my watch alarm for 2 a.m. Even though I was nervous and angst-ridden, I was quite sure I wouldn't be able to stay up until then for the second night in a row. For starters, I was exhausted after not sleeping much the previous night. And then there was what was known in spy school as Sofarenko's theory of inconvenient narcolepsy. Even if you're an insomniac, if there's something incredibly important that you absolutely need to be awake for in the middle of the night, you'll always fall asleep right before it happens. I was right to take the precaution. I passed out right after dinner while I was doing my math homework. One moment, I was in the middle of one of Mrs. Henderson's word problems, trying to determine the minimum amount of explosive needed to take down a suspension bridge, and the next thing I knew, it was the middle of the night and I was face down at my desk. Fearing my room was bugged, I had used the silent alarm mode, so I was awakened by my watch vibrating against my wrist rather than any noise at all. I'd been dreaming about being chased by bad guys. For most kids my age, this probably would have been a metaphor for some fear or another. For me, it wasn't. There was an extremely good chance that very soon I was going to be chased by bad guys. It was a relief to be awake. I quickly snapped into action, heading to the bathroom, digging the radio out of the soap and jamming it in my ear. Instead of speaking, I coughed, again because the room was probably bugged.
I'm here, Erica said in response. Good call with coughing. We can't risk you speaking at all, so let's keep that up. One cough for yes, silence for no. Ready to go? I coughed.
Good. You're 2 minutes late, by the way.
I wasn't, but there was no way to argue that via coughing, so I had to just suck up the criticism.
Move outside the house, Erica told me. Chirp like a cricket when you're out.
I pulled on my darkest clothes and sneakers, then peered under my door. The hallway was dark. I swung the door open quickly. Doors tend to creak more when you try to do it slowly, and edged into the hall. The door to Ashley's room was closed. Murray's, too. I could hear him snoring like a chainsaw on the other side. Nefarious's door hung open, however. I glanced toward the stairs. A constantly shifting blue glow came from downstairs. The television was on. I slunk down the stairs carefully, fearing Nefarious would be wide awake on the couch, blocking my escape. Sure enough, he was there. But to my great relief, he was asleep. He was still sitting upright, but his head was lolled back, a strand of drool oozing from the corner of his mouth. The TV screen had gone into sleep mode, which meant he'd been out for at least 10 minutes. I slipped out the front door. The night was alive with the chirping of crickets, which was probably why Erica had asked me to imitate one. One cricket chirp among thousands wouldn't stand out, while a cough would. It occurred to me only then that I had no idea how to chirp like a cricket. It had never come up before. Mooing like a cow I could handle, or bleating like a sheep. After all, like most people, I'd been doing barnyard animal noises since I was barely able to talk. But crickets? Not so much. I gave it my best shot.
You call that a cricket? Erica sighed. That sounded more like a sick chickadee.
Again, there was no way to argue the point. Can you get to the northeast corner of the compound? Erica asked. I oriented myself with the stars. After my adventures fighting Spider the previous summer, I had resumed normal spy camp education, and Woodchuck Wallace had given an excellent seminar on nighttime navigation. Northeast was on the opposite side of the community from where I was, over where the construction was taking place. I cased the street. No one else seemed to be awake. I tried the cricket again. That's a little better, Erica told me. At least you're in the insect spectrum now. How long do you think it will take? One chirp for each 5 minutes. It wasn't far across the compound, but I didn't want to rush myself either. While I couldn't see any guards at the moment, I knew they were out there somewhere, on patrol. I chirped 3 times. Okay, talk to you then. I went the roundabout way, sticking to the shadows as much as possible. It was a relief when I got out of the area where the houses were finished, where any insomniac spider agent might be looking out the window or returning home from a late-night session in the underground lair, and made it to the area that was under construction. There, I was able to move about more quickly, dodging among the bulldozers and skirting the septic tank pits. Even so, I remained constantly on alert, aware that someone else was probably lurking in those shadows, and I didn't say a word to Erica, even though I desperately wanted to. I knew I had to tell her that Spider's plans were launching the next evening, but I also knew that any word I said placed me in jeopardy. If a bad guy heard me scuffling across the dirt, they wouldn't necessarily know it was a human doing that. It could have been a squirrel or a rat. But if I spoke, that was a different story. Squirrels and rats didn't speak much. The enemy would know a human was out there in the darkness, and more important, they'd know I was in contact with someone else. So I kept the information to myself for the time being, not wanting to tank the operation until I had what I needed. I reached the northeast corner of the compound in 14 minutes. This area was the most barren and hidden forest. No frames of future homes, only a few cement foundations for homes to be, with the occasional pit for a septic tank. There was little I could do to blend in, save for keeping low to the ground. I made another cricket chirp. You're in position? Erica asked. Chirp. All right, I have a package. I'm sending over. It's a little bigger than a softball. Ready? I focused on the top of the wall at the corner of the compound and chirped again. My cricket imitation was getting much better with all the practice. Good. Then stay ready. I'm waiting for the right opportunity. 30 seconds ticked by. 60. 90. At 94 seconds, a truck rumbled down the road outside Hidden Forest. In the quiet country night, the sound carried far. It was enough to cover the noise Erica was about to make. Incoming, she told me. A black ball, barely visible against the night sky, sailed over the wall. It just cleared the barbed wire, then hit the ground a few feet away from me and rolled. I went after it, but before I could grab it, it tumbled over the lip of a septic pit and dropped inside. Got it? Erica asked. There was no way to say, give me a minute, in cricket, so I didn't say anything. Instead, I sidled to the edge of the pit and peered inside. It was about a 4-foot drop down to the cement lid of the septic tank. Is there a problem? Erica asked. I remained silent again, meaning no. Then I slid over the edge as quietly as possible until my toes touched the cement. It was even darker down in the hole than it was on ground level. The black ball had completely melted away. I had to fumble blindly in the shadows for a few seconds until I found it, nestled between the wall of dirt and a large metal hinge in the septic lid. I chirped. Got it? Erica asked. Chirp. Erica sighed with relief. You had me worried there. Get that package back to your room, ASAP. Your instructions are inside. Contact me tomorrow night at this time for further orders. She was signing off. I didn't have any more time to play it safe. Erica, I whispered. Shh, she hissed. Spider's plans launch tonight at 8 p.m. Erica was silent for a moment. Then she said, nuts. A flashlight beam suddenly sliced through the darkness above me. I froze, terrified. In my hurry to tell Erica about Spider, I hadn't checked to see if anyone was around. The beam crossed over my head once, then went back the other way. Then another one joined it. If I hadn't been in the septic pit, they would have lit me up like a theater marquee.
What's wrong?
One of the flashlight people asked. A male voice, a good distance away from me. It was deep and ominous. I didn't recognize it.
I thought I heard something.
This voice I recognized. Joshua Halal.
I hear them, Erica whispered in my ear. Just stay still. Don't move a muscle or make a sound.
I'd already figured that out myself.
What was it?
The voice I didn't recognize asked.
I don't know, Joshua replied. The sound of footsteps crunching across the dirt came my way. The flashlight beam shimmied above my head. If the spider agents got to the edge of the pit, or even close to it, I was a sitting duck. But if I tried to run, they'd see me too, which basically limited my options to one thing, praying for a miracle. The footsteps were frighteningly close now. The beams were getting brighter as the spider agents approached. A loud feline yowl suddenly pierced the air. There was a soft thump on the ground nearby, followed by the sound of something dashing across the dirt. The flashlight swung away from me toward the sound.
It's just a stupid cat, Joshua muttered. Sorry.
There's nothing wrong with being cautious,
the mystery man said. The footsteps started again, but now they were heading away from me. I realized I'd been holding my breath for the past minute. I blew it out, then inhaled quietly, unable to believe my luck.
That wasn't luck, Erica said, reading my thoughts.
That was Granddad. He bought the cat in case of trouble. He got it at the pound today,
though I'm the one who threw it over the wall.
There was no way to chirp, thank you. I had to hope silence would suffice.
And don't get too upset about the cat, Erica added. We're not abandoning it. It has a microchip ID tag, so we can get it back.
Joshua and the mystery man were now a good distance away from me. I could barely hear their voices once they began to speak again.
How's everything looking for tomorrow?
The mystery man asked.
Perfect, Joshua replied.
If he added anything else, I didn't hear it. They were out of range. I chanced to look out of the pit. They had turned off their flashlights, but I could make out their silhouettes against the lights of the rec center. They were heading directly toward it, probably going to the very same subterranean secret room I was supposed to break into, which meant I couldn't do the break-in that night.
We've just changed the plans, given your new information, Erica told me. You're still to proceed according to the instructions in your package and infiltrate the subterranean room at your first opportunity. But check in immediately afterward. It'll be risky, but given Spider's timeline, we don't see that there's any other choice. If anything goes wrong before then, one of us will always be on the radio, ready to respond. Though I hope, for your sake, that isn't necessary.
I hope so too. My heart was still pounding from the fright Joshua had given me.
Understand your orders? Erica asked.
I chirped, although my mouth was so dry it sounded like a cricket on its deathbed.
Okay, Erica said. Good luck tomorrow. We're all counting on you.
Then she was gone.
Chapter 15. Infiltration. Spider Agent Training Facility. Student Housing. September 17, 0330 hours. It took me nearly an hour to work my way back to my room from the septic tank. I wasn't sure if Joshua and the mystery man had actually gone into the recreation center, or if they were still outside on the alert. Maybe they'd notified security as well, so I moved as slowly and carefully as possible. At one point, a beetle passed me. My caution paid off, though. I didn't have another close call the whole way back. By the time I returned, Nefarious wasn't on the couch anymore. He'd apparently woken and realized he ought to be in bed. As proof, the door to his room was closed, as were Ashley's and Murray's. I slipped inside my room, then went into the bathroom and locked the door. For the first time since receiving it, I finally had a good look at the package Erica had delivered. The ball was made of some kind of foam, painted black, like styrofoam, but lighter, and it smelled slightly like breakfast cereal. A thin line ran around the circumference. I grabbed both halves of the ball and twisted them in opposite directions. The package popped open. The inside was mostly more foam. There was a single, small, rectangular gap carved in it with an electronic device nestled there. The device was only 4 inches long, 2 inches wide, and a half inch thick. It had a screen like a smartphone and an on-off switch. Although I'd never seen a device like this in real life before, I knew from school that it was designed to break codes. Officially, the CIA referred to it as a complex algorithm decryption apparatus, but everyone just called it a safecracker. Tucked beneath the safecracker was a creased piece of paper. I unfolded it to find my orders, printed in an extremely small font so that all of them would fit on the page. Step one was, the foam ball is biodegradable. Put it in the toilet and flush it. I did as ordered. The ball turned out to be made of some sort of wheat or corn foam. It quickly dissolved in the toilet bowl and easily flushed away. The rest of the instructions were a bit more complicated. The first part involved waiting until 10 in the morning. No explanation was given for why this time was chosen, but I figured it had to do with when the secret underground room was easiest to infiltrate. As I'd already discovered, Joshua Halal tended to haunt the place at night. Plus, my wandering into the recreation center in the wee hours would be suspicious.
while showing up mid-morning wouldn't be unusual at all. This time, however, I couldn't get back to sleep. I was too nervous. I'd never infiltrated any place alone before, not in the real world, at least. I'd done simulations in Infiltration and Escape 101, but that had never been my strongest class. I'd received a C in it. Whenever I'd done any real-world infiltration, Erica had been with me. Or, more to the point, I'd been with her. She had done all the work, while I'd tailed along. I spent the early morning reading and rereading my instructions, committing them to memory so I could shred the paper and flush the evidence. I imagined every possible scenario where things could go wrong. How would I behave if I was caught in the act? What would I say if anyone asked me what I was doing there? And if things went really, really wrong, how would I escape? By 7 a.m., I couldn't take it anymore. I got dressed and went downstairs. To my surprise, both Ashley and Nefarious were awake. Nefarious was in his usual spot on the couch, already flying pretend fighter jets. Ashley was dressed for a workout in a purple leotard, blending a shake.
"Good morning," she said cheerfully. "Want some?"
I didn't want any, but I also didn't want to get on Ashley's bad side. So instead I said, "Sure," and grabbed a glass from the cabinet.
"Why's everybody up so early today?"
"Couldn't sleep. Too excited." Ashley poured some shake for me. She'd put a lot of kale in it, so it was an unsettling vomit green.
"I can't believe the big day is really here."
"Me neither," I said, trying to sound just as upbeat.
"Is Murray up?"
Ashley snorted with disdain. "Are you kidding? That kid makes sloths look hyperactive. He'll probably be in bed till noon." I took a sip of my shake and almost gagged on it. Not only did it taste and smell terrible, it also had the texture of phlegm. It took a massive effort for me to force it down.
"Do you like it?"
Ashley asked eagerly.
"It's great," I lied. "What's in it?"
"Since we need to be extra amped today, I made my special mega protein booster. Kale, acai berries, almond milk, flaxseed, ginseng, spinach, fish oil, chia seeds, chicory, maki, goji, mangosteen, pantothene, elasmodium, and amino blasters."
"Are all those real things?" I asked, because a lot of them sound like Dr. Seuss characters. Ashley giggled.
"They're all real. My old coach designed it especially for me to focus my chi energy and provide extra vibrancy to my muscles. Can you feel the power churning through you?"
The only thing I could feel churning was my stomach.
"I sure can."
"Good, because we're going to need that energy today."
Ashley looked toward Nefarious to make sure he was immersed in his video game, then lowered her voice to a whisper.
"If everything goes right tonight, you and I will be at Disney World soon."
I forced a smile.
"Can't wait."
"Me neither. I'm so happy I turned to crime. This is way better than gymnastics." Ashley took another gulp of shake, humming "It's a Small World" while she downed it. I didn't think I could stomach another sip of my shake, let alone drink the whole glass, and I was itching to get out of the house anyhow. Mind if I take this to go?" I asked. "I was hoping to get a workout at the rec this morning."
"Not at all. I'm going to work out myself,"
Ashley said, then added confidentially, "I might as well use all the equipment while I still got it, because after tonight, we are out of here." She flashed me a smile, unaware her teeth were filled with chia seeds, then trotted off to her private gym. Nefarious appeared to have forgotten I was even in the room. He was in the zone, piloting his two virtual jet fighters at once on their run. Once Ashley was out of sight, I dumped the shake down the sink and grabbed a package of Pop-Tarts instead. Then I ducked out the door. I really did head to the rec to work out. I hadn't been lying about that. The way I figured, it would be easier to find an opportune time to infiltrate the underground lair if I was already hanging out close by. And besides, exercising beat twiddling my thumbs and watching the clock. So I swam laps, rode the exercycle, shot baskets. I even did a little target shooting on the firing range. I didn't manage many kill shots, but I at least winged the silhouette most times, which was enough to avoid the wrath of Mr. Seabrook. Then, at 9:30, I shifted to the rock wall. I tucked the safecracker in my pocket, strapped on a safety harness, and clipped into the automatic belay device. I opted not to use any of the loner rock climbing shoes available to us, because it was almost impossible to run in rock climbing shoes, should that become necessary. And besides, they all were uncomfortably tight and smelled like foot fungus. Instead, I used my sneakers. I climbed for 15 minutes, during which no one else even entered the recreation center. I scaled the fake pinnacle and scanned Hidden Forest from the top. Through the windows, I could see the entire community laid out below me. The construction zone was alive with activity. bulldozers shoving earth around, cement trucks pouring foundations, carpenters putting up frames with pneumatic hammers. However, the residential side was eerily quiet. Not a soul moved on the streets. There was no sign of Joshua or any of my instructors. I wondered if they were all sleeping in like Murray, resting up for the big day ahead. Or they might have all been holed up in the underground lair. Unfortunately, I had only one way to find out. I decided not to wait until 10. It was close enough, and I wasn't going to get a better time to break in. I rappelled down, unclipped from the rope, and checked my surroundings one last time. Then I grabbed the secret handhold and twisted it. The hidden door popped open. The lights weren't on inside, which seemed to be a good indication that no one was in there. I also couldn't hear any voices from below. The place was quiet as a tomb. I slipped inside, shut the door behind me, and fumbled around on the walls until I found a switch. The lights popped on, illuminating the staircase. I descended quickly, wanting to get in and out as fast as possible. The less time in the lair, the less chance I had of being caught. I hurried past the conference room and the frozen yogurt machine into the main control room. The four large monitors were off. Without them, the room was dimly lit. I could barely make out the safe on the wall, even though no attempt had been made to conceal it. There was no picture hanging in front of it. It was very obviously a safe door, a square foot of thick steel with an electronic combination lock. I took the safecracker from my pocket. On the back, a thin strip of plastic covered an adhesive backing, like on the flap of an envelope. I peeled the plastic off and stuck the safecracker just beneath the combination lock. Then I turned it on. The screen took a few seconds to light up. When it did, it displayed three application icons: rotary combination decryptor, electronic combination decryptor, and MP3 player. Apparently, some agents like to listen to music when safecracking. I opted to stay silent and press the icon for the electronic combination decryptor. The safecracker whirred into action. 15 separate images appeared in a row on the screen, one for each piece of the combination. Then the safecracker began to spin through all the possibilities for each of them, not just numbers, but also punctuation marks, symbols, and letters from a variety of alphabets. Every now and then, one of the 15 images would freeze, indicating that the safecracker had locked in on the correct symbol. A 9, an ampersand, one of those weird O's with a line through it that the Swedish like so much. But mostly, the images kept spinning. It took a nerve-wrackingly long time. I decided to check out the rest of the room. It beat sitting there, watching the safecracker work. And should anyone from Spider enter, I'd probably look less suspicious wandering about than I would standing in front of the safe, staring at a decoding device. When I'd been there before, I'd been so focused on Joshua, I hadn't paid much attention to the rest of the room. It turned out there wasn't much to it. Short of the monitors and the couch in front of them, there were only some workspaces around the walls. These all had desks, ergonomic chairs, and jacks for portable computers. But the computers weren't there. Being portable, they were probably with the people who needed them. The only other item of interest was a large joystick that sat on the coffee table in front of the couch. At least it looked like a joystick. I'd never seen one like this before. It appeared to be custom-made, with more than a dozen buttons in the base. I glanced back at the safecracker. 13 of the icons had been selected. Only 2 were still spinning. And then the 14th locked into place. It was a U with an umlaut. I hurried back over to the safe, watching the 15th icon spin, and spin, and spin. Whatever icon this was, the safecracker was having a nasty time figuring it out. But then it began to slow down, sifting through fewer and fewer possibilities, as though narrowing in on the final icon. After 30 seconds, it was down to 10, then 9, then 8, and then all the icons vanished. I was expecting a nice, resounding click from the safe as the bolt slid open. Instead, a message appeared on the safecracker's display: System error. I groaned. However, this wasn't entirely unexpected. The instructions Erica had given me indicated as much. There's a 20% chance the thing won't work. After all, it was built by a government contractor. In this case, rather than rebooting, which probably won't work either, go with Plan B. Plan B was a bit simpler than Plan A. The safecracker wasn't merely a piece of technology. It was also an explosive. However, blowing the door of the safe off was much riskier than cracking the code. It was loud, disruptive, and made a lot of smoke, which meant there was a good chance it would set off either the security or fire alarm. However, my instructions mandated that I proceed with it and hope for the best. I'd already squandered too much precious time. There was a small red switch on the edge of the safecracker, with a red pin lodged in to ensure that I didn't flip the switch by accident when it was in my pocket and blow my legs off. I pulled the pin, then flipped the switch. The system error message disappeared and was now replaced by a timer showing 15 seconds. I ran, dove over the couch, then